Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adesk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, March 25th, 2015. Wendy Wilson will be joining us this afternoon in just a few short minutes right after the market report. It will be brief today. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
We had a little bit of a drop in the markets today, so we had gold popped a little bit, but not much, but a little bit to the upside of 220 at 1196, had a high just slightly over 1200, couldn't keep it, 1196, silver's up fractionally, up a penny, 1706. Platinum was up 7 at 1147, along with palladium up 4 at 769. The USDX today was down 0.24 at 96.93. Crude oil was up 1.44 at 48.95. And the paper markets today, the Dow was down almost 300 points. We were talking about 300, 400, 500-point drops yesterday. The Dow was down 292 at 17,718. The NASDAQ was down 118. That's a big drop for the NASDAQ. You're looking at almost 2.5% at 48.76, and the S&P was down 1.5%. Down 30 at 2,061. 10-year yield popped back up, of course, 0.04 at 1.92%. The euro is trading at 1.10. So we had a little bit of action in the markets today. There were some big mergers in the news today. We can talk about that in a little bit. Germany was down almost about 1.25%, down 140 points. So seeing that the downtrend started in Europe last night, followed through to the States. The durable goods report was out today, and we'll talk about that after the break. So let's get right to Wendy Wilson today of the Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy. Well, I guess Wendy's not here.
Well, I'm here.
Well, you're
what
there.
About Wendy?
Well, we can go ahead and until she gets... Until we can
it says we're having a little delay.
All right, well, let's go on until she gets on.
The producer says we're having a little delay, so I'm not sure what that means.
Let's go on while we wait for her to...
Well, let's see.
Get on board. Let me go ahead.
Say, all right. You know, one thing before we even do that, you know, gold jumped a little over $2 today. A lot of people might not find that very impressive, but the truth of the matter is if gold went up $2 a day, that's $10 a week, that's over $500 a year. You know, $2 isn't a bad increase. You know?
Well, I would have liked to have seen it close up over 12. You know, it did hit 12. Maybe we'll get there tomorrow. But I feel much comfortable with gold hitting over 12. So that's what I would have liked to have seen today. And I do believe,
what do you think will happen tomorrow?
You know, durable good. It depends on well, we can talk about this after the break. I believe Wendy is on the phone, on the line right now. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. Hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy. What
hey.
You got for us?
Well, we're going to talk about industry standards, how it affects our health everywhere. Because you've seen TV ads, I'm sure everybody has, for prescription drugs, and then they talk about the side effects of the drug. And then sometimes the side effects are worse than what you would take the drug for, to be honest. And then if you don't change the channel, a lot of times there's an attorney ad right after that. And it's about that same drug saying, if you were harmed by this drug, contact our offices. You may be worth you may have compensation, you know, due you. So I got me thinking about, you know, this whole process of how the pharmaceutical companies get drugs on the market. So if you go to the website of the FDA, they have some general guidelines that they list there on the approval process for prescription medications. So the FDA states they're really not involved in any of the clinical trials, but they are involved in the evaluation process after all the data is submitted to them on the medications, and they have this panel that conducts this review, and on the panel they have some experts. They have some physicians, they have statisticians, chemists, pharmacologists, and other scientific experts. So you would think that with a panel of experts like that, we would probably have very rare death by drug on the market, wouldn't you think?
Well, that would be the theory.
That would be the theory, yeah. Well, I'm sorry to say, I don't think the panel either gets all the information that they should review on the medications or something may be amiss. But the FDA does have a checklist when they do receive this information from the drug manufacturers. And it goes something like this. They ask, does the drug affect the body as it is stated in the documents? An example would be if they're reviewing a blood pressure medication, does it actually lower blood pressure? Then they look and check to see if the drug dosage and frequency is you know, on par with the use of the drug. They look and they review the side effects that are listed, what the pharmaceutical company cops to, and they check to see if any of those side effects can be, quote, managed, okay? You know, possibly.
And how do they manage them? By selling more drugs?
Yeah, with another med. Then they look and see how the body breaks down these chemicals, because these are toxic drugs. So they look to see how the body handles the toxicity and if there's any accumulation effect of the toxicity. And then they check the drug's interactions with food, beverages, and other medications to try to identify what you should avoid. And lastly, they look at the overall rating of the drug's effectiveness for the market approval process. So they look to see if it's, you know, going to benefit, if it's going to make some money, you know, so forth and so on. So there's this two-tiered process, Al, Melody, at the FDA when it comes to their drug approval process. Under the Prescription Drug User Free Act of 1992, they have a standard tier of approval process, and then they have a priority review process. So the drug that offers minor improvement tends to fall under the standard review process, and that could take about 10 months. Drugs that appear to offer major advances in treatments or is a new treatment will fall under the priority review, and that takes about 6 months. They also have a fast-track accelerated approval option for the approval of breakthrough therapies or if a new drug has advantages over existing treatments. So advantages would be, is there superior effectiveness of the drug? There's no serious side effects of the drug. Statistically better patient outcomes while they're using the drug. Also reduced treatment toxicity and anticipation of public health need, otherwise known as pandemic. Kind of fast track those vaccines. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you'll have our vaccine for the swine flu. It should be ready by the following spring. After we have the outbreak, they'll have the vaccine up.
Well,
just a few months later.
Well, the accelerated process takes 60 days, roughly. Okay, so, but the FDA, you know, you have to ask yourself, okay, so they go through all this for prescription drugs. What about over-the-counter and grandfathered medications? What do you suppose happens with those? Well, the FDA...
depends on how much money they can make.
Well, no, they can't handle it because there's over 300,000 over-the-counter products. They can't possibly review them all, okay? The agency can't do it. Too many, they say. So therefore, the agency lumps them into categories that pertain to it, their active ingredients. For example, if a product has an analgesic or an antacid effect, they'll place that into the therapeutic category where there's 80 different classes of drugs. So for each class of drug, there's a recipe book. Did you know this? There's a recipe book. The FDA calls it a monograph. Okay.
Do they make FDA brownies using these drugs?
Oh, you gotta end, Al. Okay, let's not go there. Anyway, moving along. The recipe book, also known as the monograph, lists the drug's approval ingredients for that particular over-the-counter medicine. So it lists the ingredients, the dose, the formulation, and, of course, all the labeling restrictions. So all that a manufacturer has to do is follow the recipe. And they can market this over-the-counter product without FDA pre-approval. That's right. So the FDA concludes that the monographs, the recipes, are safe and effective. So if you're following that recipe, you're fine. So your
These monographs and these products have not actually been tested. The FDA is apparently, if I'm understanding you correctly, they are concluding, well, if you use this plus this plus this, everything should be fine. But they haven't actually tested it.
Well, and they don't require any clinical testing to review that. But they, you know, they're just assuming, okay, history has proven, I guess, grandfathered, if you will, these ingredients, and you're cool if you want to use those. So your allergy drugs, your pain relievers, your digestive and sleep aids, and any of the over-the-counter products are not closely monitored, and they would be only examined by the FDA if there was a problem in the market. Okay, so they don't examine them prior to entering the market. Okay?
Yep.
Okay. So, according to the World Health Organization, 25% of the pharmaceutical drugs in the United States are made from plants. I think it's more like 2%. Everything's synthetic now. So they make synthetic copycats of these plant chemicals because it lowers their manufacturing cost. About 80% of the population of Africa and Asia, they choose to use medicinal herbs because they can't afford pharmaceuticals, for one thing, and they don't like the side effects. So you have some empirical history here that, you know, plants are the original medicine, not the alternative, okay? Yeah. Allopathic is the alternative. But I did notice something. The FDA has a list they have MedWatch forms, and they're forms 3500 and 3500A. And these offer statistics on death by scientific medicine, basically your prescription drugs. So in the United States, these statistics are posted based on these MedWatch forms, and these are incidences caused by taking a prescription medicine that has produced a serious outcome, which is either life-threatening, which causes hospitalization, causes disability, or even death. And here's what I found. It spanned a 10-year period, okay, so from 2000 to 2010. I'll give you the 2000 numbers, and then I'll skip to the 2010. In 2000, there were almost 20,000 deaths and 153,000 injuries due to prescription meds that were taken the way they were prescribed. Now we jump to 2010, the death rate jumped to 270,000. That's a 66.7% increase, and the serious injuries went to over a million. So it was 77.5% being injured by a prescription drug. What do you think of that?
That's pretty surprising for sure. Mm-hmm. How is it? What is the reason that for that dramatic increase?
Well, according to the reports, they were published actually also in the 2006 issue of Pharmacotherapy, that the mortality risk rate is jumping 20%. And when someone experiences an adverse reaction to the drug, it's usually when they're hospitalized. Okay, so they said your risk actually increases 20% if you take the drug and you're in the hospital at the time that you take it. So apparently they pump you full of other drugs to counteract your reaction, and it's probably not a very good outcome there.
It may be that you're already taking some other drugs at the mm-hmm. hospital, and there's some sort of a reaction between the new drug and the drugs you're already taking. Hard to say.
Well,
but that's certainly strange. It's probably intolerable. It is inexcusable.
Mm-hmm.
Who is anyone in Congress or whatever doing anything about this?
Well, actually, the lawyers are on top of this, to be honest. In the 2010 Connecticut Law Review, they stated that injuries and deaths that are caused by these drugs seem to be growing. So lawyers are overseeing billion-dollar lawsuits on some of the most well-known drugs for arthritis and hearts and strokes, heart attacks. Fen-phen, the diet drug, caused heart damage. Prolipsid is a gastric, it caused gastric problems. So if the drug companies, if they're paying out settlements, that's when they start to yank them off the market.
Yeah.
So I just think people need to check and do their homework. Now, pain medications are a big risk, and according to the Federal Register in 2009, there was considered this organ-specific warnings on the acetaminophen drugs, your anti-inflammatory pain relievers. They documented that these drugs cause liver damage. There were 56,000 people who ended up in the ER from 1993 to 1999. That's like 10,000 people a year from taking these meds, and there was almost 500 deaths from taking it. Your non-steroidal anti-inflammatory meds aren't any better, according to the September issue of the 1997 Annals of Internal Medicine. These drugs caused over 7,000 deaths and 76,000 hospitalizations in the U.S. So doctors, this is why doctors, they don't touch the pain meds, anti-steroidal, anti-inflammatories, they don't use them, and they don't use antidepressants or sleep aids because of the risks. They know that.
And when you say they don't touch them, I think
they don't
you mean
use them.
They don't prescribe them. Is
well,
that
they don't
true or
use
false?
Them. No, they prescribe them for patients, but they don't use them personally.
Okay. Oh, all right.
Okay, they use something else.
Do as I say, not as I do. Huh?
Yeah.
Here's the doctor. What have we got? We've got about 45 seconds left. Quick
okay.
question.
Yeah.
What do you think about reports that the FDA may be corrupt insofar as at least some elements of the FDA take bribes to approve drugs that might not be approved under normal circumstances? True or false?
Oh, I think there's corruption. I really do. I really do. Based not only on my own suspicions and what I'm reading here from the statistics. I mean, you know, this, you know, the proof is in the fruits here. You also have to take into consideration what doctors are saying. A lot of doctors have stepped out of the box and paid a heavy price saying, you know, that, you know, the FDA aren't, they're full, it's full of not nice people. And they actually work for the pharmaceutical companies. It's a big medical cartel. So, yeah. So I tell people, you know, look at your empirical history on your herbs. They don't have side effects. I don't see any death certificates, death by herb out there. So check out your herbs as an option there. If you want a free
catalog. That was an opportunity for me to do another brownie joke, but we're going to have to let that go.
Okay.
Give folks some contact information, Wendy.
Sure. And, they can call for a free product catalog. The number is 866-229-3663, 866-229-3663, or visit thepowerherbs.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Wendy. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com at 866-229-3663. Give her a call. We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements, and Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. For all your gold and silver coin needs, what's next, Melody?
Well, I ran a little special this morning. I was on Beth Ann's program, the Common Sense Coalition, and I ran a little special. And I'll continue that through today's program with Discount Gold and Silver Financial Survival Program. And that was 1/10 ounce Gold Eagle coin, 20 1-ounce Silver Eagles, include shipping for $545. I mean, you could get four of those packages, and it brings you a little over 2015. But you can buy one or 100 of these packages for $545. The price on the Silver Eagles, I mean, significant savings. It's as though you're buying a box of 500. They're really at a discounted rate, along with a 1/10 ounce Gold Eagle coin. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. 1-800-375-4188. And this brought to my attention, I've had several people call me and talk to me about what HSBC was doing. There was, reports that they were going to close their gold bullion storage, their vaults where the gold for the GLD ETF was stored. That rumor was circulating around the internet. And it was true. I mean, it was, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, the HSBC did close down their gold storage for IRAs. I mean, that did happen, 4 or 5 years ago, because we had to transfer a lot of that, the IRA holders' gold out of there and place it somewhere else. And so that did happen. But this was an incorrect report. About the closing their gold vaults. They are closing down their safety deposit box facilities in vaults and branches. Banks internationally closing boxes as not profitable, and they seem to be moving to a cashless society was part of the rumor, and that was incorrect speculation that the HSBC move forcing gold clients to sell bullion. These are just the highlights of the article as far as that they were rapidly and quietly closing gold vaults and people had to sell their gold. So incorrect rumor floating around. So folks, you know, be careful when you, you know, come across this information. We always try to verify it. And so move. Yes,
it is strange. It's a strange little report in this regard. Insofar as they justify their closing their safety deposit boxes because they're not profitable. That's like saying I own a dozen rental homes and I've decided to tear them all to the ground because the rent is still at the same price that it was 20 years ago. What's to stop me from simply raising the rent on the houses? It's the fees on the safety deposit boxes. It does seem like they have an ulterior motive. I mean, to me, if people were going to say nobody's using the safety deposit boxes anymore, all right, then it doesn't matter if you charge $500 a day for them or you charge $500 a decade. You're not going to get any payment if nobody's using safety deposit boxes. But how much trouble can it be to raise the price of renting a safety deposit box and to make them profitable? What are they going to do, rip those out of the banks now? And they're not going to have safety deposit box anymore? Not just not sell them, but rip them out? You know, it's a strange little story because it makes you wonder, why are they canceling safety deposit boxes?
Well, I mean, just like anything else with a lot of these banks, I mean, you know, they're closing a lot of branches, they're closing a lot of services, you know, because people go online. And yes, safety deposit boxes are a little different, but, you know, they're closing down services to people. You know, to clients, you know, it's more of a bother. I mean, how much money can you make off a safety deposit? It's just more of a bother. Probably the rent in New York and so forth. I mean, it's probably fairly significant. And so they just don't want to be bothered anymore. That's the way I would look at it.
But. Well, I don't know how to look at it for sure, but it just strikes me as strange. You know, all right, fine. If you used to be able to make money at $5 a month, all right, now you can't. All right, fine, raise it to 10. Why shut them down? Raise it to 20, raise it to 50, raise it to whatever. And in theory, if the market will bear your additional price, now you're still making, you know, it's like a lot of businesses. You have lost leaders. People advertise, we've got this for sale, and it's a heck of a deal, and, you know, you can take advantage of that deal, but it's there to bring people in the door. If you have safety deposit boxes, people say, oh, yeah, I want to do business with that bank because they have safety deposit boxes, and I really want one. You know, maybe I want two or three. It's just odd. A bank that doesn't provide safety deposit boxes. It strikes me as a little bit strange. And I look at it and I'm thinking to myself, what are these people really up to here? I do that because just I have a suspicious mind, perhaps.
Well, I think mine is probably more suspicious than anyone's. But, you know, I mean, we're talking about an international bank. You know, the whole point, and you're right, there could be other, you know, it could be another, you know, something behind the scenes going on. But the whole point is it was a rumor about the.
I get that.
Yeah, that was the main just.
The rumor is they were closing the vaults. They're not closing the vaults, but they are closing the safety deposit boxes.
The safety deposit boxes.
You know, it is still one other thing. It is one of the biggest banks in the world. You would think that HSBC is doing business with a lot of globalists, a lot of international people who are generating their money on an international basis. These are the kinds of people who would want, you would think they want a safety deposit box to store their jewels, their stock, whatever it is. You would think they have wealthy people that want this service, and yet they're saying, no, we're getting rid of that.
Well,
so it's something I'll keep an eye out for. We'll see if we hear more about that in the future, and maybe we can get a better idea of what's going on there. But it is a strange, strange
well, if I was,
story.
If I was a person that had extreme wealth, the last place I'd want to store it in a safety deposit box is New York City. So anyway, that would be the last place I'd want to have it. But anyway.
Here's an article from George Soros. Well, Bloomberg, actually, but the headline is George Soros warns Greece is going down the drain. Right now we're at the cusp, billionaire George Soros tells Bloomberg TV in his in a recent interview, and the chances of Greece leaving the euro area are now 50-50, and the country could go down the drain. It's now a lose-lose game, and the best that can happen is actually muddling through. Greece is a long festering problem that was mishandled from the beginning by all parties. Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras' his government needs to persuade his creditors to sign off on a package of economic measures to free up long withheld aid payments that will keep the country afloat. And if they don't do, there are reports out that Tsipras and German Chancellor Merkel have recently reached an agreement where Greece has promised certain reforms if Germany will okay just give us more money and we promise to change our ways. Now, how many believe that? You know, this is a little bit like lending more money to someone you know is a crack addict. Right? And the crack addict, oh, no, I promise. I'm not going to do anything. You lend me another couple billion or however, 100 billion or whatever. You lend me a little more money, and I promise, scout's honor, no more crack for me. I'm serious. I'm quitting right now. How many people are you going to believe that? I mean, whatever's going on here, everyone understands that Greece can't pay the existing debt. And they talked about it. The term they used just a couple of months ago was extend and pretend. They extend the loans by pretending that Greece will be able to repay the loans. And it's important to do that. Why? Everybody knows Greece is not going to repay most of that debt. Some of it, yeah. Most of it, no. Why do they extend and pretend? And pretend that it can be paid? And the reason is that as long as we pretend that the Greek bonds are still worth money, face value, then the creditors that are holding those bonds can keep them on the books and say, yes, we still have assets. Huh? We have X hundred billion dollars in assets, and they're signed off on by the government of Greece. We can pretend these are still valuable. But it's a little bit like Confederate money. Holding Confederate money after the Civil War. A lot of people held it, but the truth of the matter was, except as a collector's item, the Confederate dollar, they may have held these things because the South will rise again, but it didn't. And they may be holding Greek bonds in anticipation that Greece will rise again, but it's not going to happen in the foreseeable future. But in order to preserve the illusion that those pieces of paper are still valuable, we're going to pretend that Greece could pay these things off, and we'll pay them off. And the whole thing is nonsense. And it quite possibly goes to the idea of fractional reserve banking. And it's my understanding that in Europe, fractional reserve banking is considerably the fraction that must be maintained in the vaults in order to justify lending money is much less than it is here in the United States. It might be 30 to 1. I don't know if that's true or false. But it means that for every $1 million you've got in the vault, you can, in theory, lend $30 million. Well, Greece's bonds are in somebody's vaults. Or some people's vaults, and they are quite probably being used as collateral to justify loans. And if Greece has $100 billion in bonds that they've given to the different creditors, the creditors, in theory, might have loaned, $30 billion what did I just say? $100 billion. All right, so they've $3 trillion in theory. I don't know. But they can multiply 30 times that much to lend out to people. When, if Greece admits that, and the Europeans admit, hey, we're never going to, these pieces, they're nothing but paper. We're never going to get paid on this. Then in theory, they may have to pull in the loans that were generated based on the Greek bonds. And that can be multiples. All right, this is domino theory. This is if the one domino falls, 30 more dominoes are going to fall right behind it. And that's why they have to maintain the illusion that the first domino, the Greek bonds, got to maintain the illusion that these things are still valid. And at least that's my suspicion. So we're going to see the Greeks are going to hit the fan. This issue will hit the fan next month, if I understand correctly.
April 20th.
April 20th.
They run out of cash.
All right. So what have we got? A little less than a month. 4 weeks, maybe. 3-4 weeks, they run out of cash. Now, what do you think is going to happen, Melody? Will the European creditors give Greece more money in order to extend and pretend that their bonds have value? Or will they finally just say, that's it, we can't go any further?
Of course not.
What do you mean, of course
well,
not?
Well, they're going to have... More? No, they will.
Yeah, I think they probably will, too.
They will.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? You know what I'd like to say to Greece? Default again. Move on. Just
yeah, I know.
Move on.
But they can't.
I'm so worn out.
They can't. They got that domino effect going on with the Federal Reserve.
It's going to happen anyway.
I know it's going to happen anyway. That's the truth. But nobody wants it to happen now. Everyone said, well, who knows? Maybe we'll get lucky.
And
if we just extend this a little bit further, another 6 months, another 90 days, whatever, we extend this maybe a year. We could extend it for another year. Maybe we'll get lucky and something will break in our favor.
Well, I think Tsipras will probably play along with their deal, too. If he is the real deal and he's just gone along with all these arrangements and agreements until he positions himself. I mean, we see his relationship grow with Russia. I mean, you know, if he can change and course with some sort of an agreement with Russia, you know, then you can start to see things fall apart. So that's, to me, I think, is the key. If he has an alternative to the European Union, I think he'll take it. But, you know, we'll see.
He'll take any alternative. I mean, it's a drowning man grasping at straws. That's the analogy here. If they get their money from the Congo, it doesn't matter to them. Just give us some money so we can keep functioning.
No, I think it does matter.
Well, doesn't matter.
I mean, you know, they're not going to take money from the Congo, but, you know, they're built. Russia's a little bit different than the Congo. And I think, you know, because you've got that military force and everything else that comes with Russia. So, you know, there and the relationships between Russia and Europe and the U.S., it's a whole different ball game. But, you know.
I get that, but the Greeks will take whatever money they can get and make whatever promises they have to make. And
you've got to remember their background. I mean, they're all
the Greeks.
What?
You can't blame the Greeks. Everybody knows they're not going to pay off the existing debt. Every creditor in the world right now who might be able to lend Greece a reasonable amount of money to try to tide them over for at least a little while longer knows that odds are they're not going to be repaid however much they loan to Greece. Not going to get repaid. So these people become fools. They are enablers. Again, I'd use that the example of someone, a crack addict. It's like being the guy who sells crack or provides crack to the addict. You become an enabler. That's all you're going to do. You're going to have more money. They're going to waste it. They're not going to repay it. What are we doing here? You know, there is a point in time where you can't just blame Greece and say, well, Greece has been irresponsible or Greece isn't going to pay its debt. You got to blame the people. Look, you loan these people more money than they could ever hope to repay.
But aren't we beyond?
Do it. Got to be dumb to be. And it's not just a question of being dumb. There's a question of. There's a point in time when your stupidity goes beyond just being, oh, gee, I made a mistake, and it moves into the realm of malice. How stupid do you have to be? What are you doing here? This nation, they're going to have a very big problem in Greece before this is done. And it's been brought on not just by irresponsible Greek government, that's part of it, not just by irresponsible Greek people, that's part of it, but also by irresponsible creditors. I said, oh, yeah, let's lend more money to the crack addict. You know, it'll be we'll get the money. We'll make
and
it.
How different is that from the U.S.?
No, I know. It's just an example of what's going on here, and it's an illustration. You get to a point where the debt is too big to be repaid, and then what happens? You begin to think we're forced to face reality, like we're forced to face the reality of more commercial announcements. And we're going to do that. We're going to face it right now. I don't even need a blindfold. I'm going to listen to the commercials and hope you do too. And Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, talking about Greece and whether or not they're going to default on their loans. And one question we need to consider, one of the alternatives is that Greece, if they can't get support out of the European Union to carry them in their extend and pretend program a while longer, they may try to get some support out of Russia. Right? Could be. But one of the things we have to ask ourselves, does Russia really want to take any responsibility for Greece at this time? Because Russia has enough problems with its own economic problems based on sanctions that have been imposed by the United States government and so on. Are they really in a condition to say, well, let's take care of Greece? It'll only cost us, I don't know, a few hundred billion dollars a year. That's all. We can afford that. There's a political gain. Russia would establish a territorial presence within what was formerly the European Union. There's something to be gained here. But I'm sure there are people in Russia that are saying, I don't know. Do we really want to take on that burden? Because you know, you're just going to give money to Greece, and Greece is not going to pay it back. Will Russia get enough? you know, it depends. It's one of those things. How much they have to give them? They give them $50 million? Yeah, Royce and Kevin will afford it. Give them $500 billion? Maybe not. And when does Greece finally hit a point that it is, again, self-supporting? And it is able to make good on at least its new bonds. When is that going to happen? And how long are they going to carry these old bonds? Another year, 5 years, 20 years, 100 years? How long? Sooner or later, just like Melody said, they've got to default on the existing debt because they can't pay it. That's all. You know? We have to face reality sooner or later, but European creditors don't want to face reality at this time. So, I don't know. Do you think Russia is going to move in, or they're not going to move in, or they're going to have second thoughts?
I think it just depends on the impact it would have on the other European countries. If the sanctions continue and so forth, you know, they might think of this as a way to strike back somehow, some way. But, you know.
Who's most vulnerable in this situation, Greece or the European Union?
I would think the European Union.
You think they're more vulnerable than Greece? In other words, if they default, officially default on the Greek bonds and whatever, the real damage won't be to Greece, it'll be to the European Union. True?
Well, I mean, it'll affect all of them. You know, and it's hard to say who would be hurt the most.
Yeah, I know. That's you know, and the point is anyone not
the people
going
of
to
ask the people of Greece, and they'll probably say, you know, they would be hurt the most. But
is there anyone who's not going to be hurt that's involved in Europe, for example? Anyone over there will... Greece is going to skate, European Union going to skate, anyone who... And my point is this. No matter how you do this, there's going to be a lot of pain and aggravation for a considerable number of people, not just in Greece, but also in the European Union.
And, you know, Al, something that just crossed my mind, you know, we saw the euro crash, the dollar gets strong. Maybe they allowed the euro to crash. In anticipation of the Greeks defaulting. Maybe that was the whole scenario to begin with. Because, I mean, it was all kind of coincided with, the last episode of Greece, you know, to where you had that euro crash.
I don't know. That's not something that's beyond my pay grade to speculate on.
Well, lower currency creates inflation. They needed
well, I know
that
they
inflation.
Want inflation
they wanted
to allegedly
it.
Stimulate, and to some degree they're having success with that. I've seen reports the European economy is jumping, and it may be that their attempts
to
inflate
to
have actually succeeded.
And what does that do to their debt?
Well, the euro becomes less valuable.
Right.
And it allows people to pay off their debts with cheaper euros. I get that.
So maybe
but
that was the...
Is it enough to make a difference for Greece?
Perhaps.
I don't think it's enough to make a significant difference. Some difference, yes. Significant difference, probably not in my
opinion.
But
maybe it was enough difference.
Here's the lesson on this. The lesson is something I've harped on for several years. One man's debt is another man's asset in this fiat currency monetary system. If I borrow $1 billion, I have the advantage of using that money for a while, but someone else, I owe $1 billion, but someone else is holding a piece of paper with my signature on it, says Al promises to repay $1 billion. They're treating it as an asset. If I default on the debt, say, oh, you'd never guess what, I spent all that money, it's gone, and I'll never be able to pay back the bill. Guess what? The asset disappears. The debt is defaulted on, but the asset also disappears, and that's the danger in this debt-based monetary system. When it finally breaks down and say, gee, we can't pay the debt, it means that the correlative assets also have to be vaporized. They are rendered invalid, you know, they are no longer worth a nickel. And that's what we're seeing here. If Greece just defaulted on its loan once upon a time, if we had a real monetary system and it was, and the loan was secured by gold, bars of gold, and Greeks said, gee, we can't pay. Well, okay, then somebody else gets the gold. But the gold is still there. The gold doesn't disappear when we default on the debt. It may no longer be owned by Greece, But somebody's got the gold, and the economy, the general economy, is not damaged because the because the capital has disappeared and vaporized. But that's not true with our brave new fiat currency world. When somebody defaults on the debt, it also wipes out the correlative assets, and with fractional reserve banking, maybe even more than the correlative financial assets, which means, we got a terrible, terrible problem here. If Greece defaults, somebody's going to lose assets big time, and maybe more than that, you know, domino effect. So this is the kind of conundrum that we may wind up facing here in this country. We, too, have debt far beyond our ability to repay. And sooner or later, we are going to find ourselves in circumstances similar to that of Greece. Insofar as somebody's going to have to come up and step up and tell the truth, say, guess what? We can't pay? How about that? We spent it all, or at least most of it, and we're not going to be able to repay the existing debt. And what happens when we hit that moment? Will the world extend and pretend and keep lending us more money? In a sense, we've already hit that moment insofar as the Federal Reserve is the last entity, or at least it has been, that was willing to lend substantial funds to the United States government. There's others around, but the Federal Reserve has been the primary entity that was purchasing U.S. bonds. Huh? They've stopped that for a while, but we'll watch and see how long before they have to start it again. Creditors have already said, look, you can't repay your bills. Why would we lend you more? You guys are like Greece, just another bunch of crack addicts, or we could say fiat monetary addicts. You're addicted to this fiat monetary system, and you can't handle it. You know? So, from my perspective, when will the United States government find itself in a position that's officially similar to what we see in Greece right now? I don't know. Could be several years. Could be several months. Hard to say. You know, but we're going to get there. Somebody's going to have to admit that the debt can't be paid. And when that happens, when the debt is canceled, so are the correlative assets and the fractional reserve banking. One domino knocks down 9 or 10 more. This is all goes to this business that we have been foolish by allowing our government to impose a debt-based monetary system here in the United States and a debt-based monetary system throughout the world. It's all illusory. It's all crazy, kind of madness where we sit back and say, a piece of paper, that's a payment. No, it's not. Promise to pay. That's all it is. It's only a promise to pay, and the promises are so thick that they can't all be kept. And when it all blows up, I mean, it's going to be a downturn to remember. Right? When? Nobody knows, but we're certainly closer today than we were yesterday. What else, Melody?
Well, I agree with you there. You know, in China, the manufacturing, that slumped to the lowest in 11 months. And there was a guy by the name of Jack Ablin. He's the chief investment officer at BMO Private Bank. And he said he thinks it's going to be tough for the markets to push higher. Major indexes reached record highs earlier this month, even though the analysts expect earnings to shrink in the first half of the year. The whole point, you know, and I don't pay much attention to chief investment officers from, you know, any type of a private bank, but he's admitting that the markets are going to have a difficult time continuing to make these new highs. Certainly with the underlying economy that's not following the direction of the market. So he says at some point we're going to hit the intersection of reality and expectations. And so I believe that intersection, is not going to be a nice collision there, because I believe reality will certainly be the one to a shock. Shock and all.
In the end, it's just a way of saying the truth will out. Yeah. Sooner or later, we have to deal with the truth. Government's betting we won't have to deal with it for another couple of decades, and reality is that maybe we're going to have to deal with it a whole lot sooner. All right, maybe months, a couple of years at the most, but who knows? We'll watch and see. I think one of the statements that you made, and I don't think it was, I think you were quoting when you said this, you said the problem is that the economy is not following the market's lead.
That is correct.
All right. Now, do you see how stupid that is? It is not up to the economy to follow the market. The market, and that's the way the government thinks, however, if we can stimulate the market, the economy will follow. Again, this goes to that analogy. If it's too cold in your home, all you have to do is put a match under the thermometer near your thermostat, and it'll raise the apparent temperature, and then everybody will think it's warm, and they'll be comfortable. That's all you need is one match to warm the house. Well, it's just nonsense. It is not up to the economy to follow the markets. It's up to the markets to follow the economy. They're complaining about a disconnect. Why are the markets disconnected from reality?
Mm-hmm.
And the question is because the government has been artificially stimulating the markets. They're stoned. That's our crack addict right there. They've been stoned, baby. This is, Wall Street. They're all essentially doing crack, and the Federal Reserve and federal government are providing crack to Wall Street to impress the people that it's party time. And the truth is there's a disconnect. They're partying on Wall Street, but they're partying with this artificial stimulant called quantitative easing 1, 2, and 3, and soon probably 4.
Yep.
That's what's getting them high. And the rest of the people are saying, hey, what about us? We're not partying. We're not having that good time. And they say, oh, God, just, get the party hats and horns and have a good time. How are we going to pay for them? Well, that's not our problem. But this disconnect is because the markets have been artificially elevated. And the reality has not followed. And it's just evidence that the markets don't control the reality. They should reflect the reality. And when you see it from that perspective, you sit back and say, ooh, wait a second. If they have to reflect reality, then I guess they're going to shut down, aren't they? They're going to drop considerably in the foreseeable future. We'll talk more about the markets tomorrow. I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Thanks for listening. Bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got to be a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. Money, money, must be funny.